So, a little passage for you from Ed Brown. When I first started cooking at Tassajara, I had a problem. I couldn't get my biscuits to come out the way they were supposed to. I'd follow the recipe and try variations, but nothing worked. These biscuits just didn't measure up. Growing up, I had made two kinds of biscuits. One was from Bisquick, and the other from Pillsbury. For the Bisquick biscuits, you added milk to the mix and then blobbed the dough in spoonfuls into the pan. You didn't even need to roll them out. The biscuits from Pillsbury came in a kind of cardboard can. You wrapped the can on a corner of the counter and it popped open. Then you twisted the can open more, put the pre-made biscuits on a pan and baked them. I really liked those Pillsbury biscuits. Isn't that what biscuits should taste like? Mine just weren't coming out right. It's wonderful and amazing, the ideas we get about what biscuits should taste like, or what a life should look like. Compared to what? Canned biscuits from Pillsbury? Leave It to Beaver? People who ate my biscuits could extol their virtues, eating one after another. But to me, these perfectly good biscuits just weren't right. Finally, one day came a shifting into place, an awakening. Not right compared to what? Oh my word, I'd been trying to make canned Pillsbury biscuits. Then came an exquisite moment of actually tasting my biscuits without comparing them to some previously hidden standard. They were weedy, flaky, buttery, sunny, earthy, real. They were incomparably alive, present, vibrant, in fact, much more satisfying than any memory. These occasions can be so stunning, so liberating, these moments when you realize your life is just fine as it is, thank you. Only the insidious comparison to a beautifully prepared, beautifully packaged product made it seem insufficient. Trying to produce a biscuit, a life, with no dirty bowls, no messy feelings, no depression, no anger, was so frustrating. Then savoring, actually tasting the present moment of experience, how much more complex and multifaceted, how unfathomable, a thought, a feeling, ants crawling on the ground in the sunlight. As Zen students, we spend years trying to make it look right, trying to cover the faults, conceal the messes. We knew what the Bisquick Zen student looked like. Calm, buoyant, cheerful, energetic, deep, profound. Our motto, as one of my friends said, was looking good. We've all done it, trying to look good as husband, wife, partner, parent, trying to attain perfection, trying to make Pillsbury biscuits. Well, to heck with it, I say. Wake up and smell the coffee. How about some good old home cooking, the biscuits of today? Handle each ingredient with sincerity and wholeheartedness. The results will take care of themselves. It was kind of a long reading, but I really felt like that one was worth the time. Because it resonates for me on so many different levels. I certainly remember, as a person beginning the practice of Zen and for many years, entering into the Zendo and trying to change my mind, trying to turn my mind into a Pillsbury biscuit. hoping that, you know, I could get this nice pre-made image of an enlightened mind and get it to replace the rather frustrating one that I had. And of course, you know, teachers would tell us again and again, that's not really what this project is, but, you know, I would continue with it, imagining some compass point that I could at some point attain that, you know, just wasn't where I was. And that's painful. That's actually a very painful experience. In a sense, it's not really a compassionate experience, this way of meeting ourselves that judges and says, you know, not quite good enough. And not just meeting ourselves, as Ed Brown says, but, you know, meeting our lives. Always needing the next thing, the next accomplishment, perhaps picturing that, you know, we're not good enough in our work, in our partnership. Maybe we're not good enough drivers. Who knows? You know, we'll lock into anything, really. I'm a drummer, and I've gotten to get back on the drums lately. I had tendonitis for 2.5 years that prevented me from playing, and I missed it, but lately I've been playing a bit. And, you know, getting back on the drums, I was just reflecting a little bit, because as I was playing, you know, I realized that I didn't sound quite as good as, like, Billy Kilson or... You don't know these names. These monsters of drummers, these people who were just shredding it up, you know, could do anything in any time signature and, you know, so explosive and fast and everything else. And, you know, I'm just me. And, you know, if I kind of sit there and compare my drumming to these amazing Pillsbury Biscuits, I realize that, you know, I ain't matching up. And the other day I was poking around, listening to a drummer I'd not heard before, and he had this YouTube video of him playing with just a guitar player, and it was so spacious and beautiful, what was happening, the sensitivity of touch. Not particularly, like, difficult in a technical sense, but so beautiful. And I just saw the freedom that was there, and I realized, what am I doing trying to be someone else? And it was, you know, a little bit like Ed Brown said, it was just this feeling of freedom, of awakening. Like, maybe I can just hear what I'm doing. Appreciate these sounds that are being produced. Now, what about this heart-mind that produces all kinds of interesting sounds? Frustrations, little depressions, grief, joy, love. All of our changes, shape-shifting changes that we go through. Do I really want to exchange this life for a different life? What brings us here? Is that the goal? Are we hoping to become something else? And Brown calls it a kind of awakening, this moment when he realizes what he's doing, that he's set up something outside of his actual life that he seems to be aiming toward. And I like to highlight that, you know, I don't think he really says that, like, so then I just stopped comparing my life to other people's lives and et cetera, right? That we might imagine, we might set another compass point right out of this talk. Can you see it beginning to happen? Oh, well, then I'll just stop doing this with my mind and I'll be... But that's not really the point either. It's not about creating a new sense of direction in our practice. Like, I'll just change myself in this other way and then I'll be good. It was the moment of seeing that that's what's happening that was liberating. And so that's our practice. Again and again, we point to this. And I think we do practice when we see it, we notice it, and we don't necessarily put energy into recreating whatever it is that is painful. You know, like it says in The Way of Tenderness, we can let go. We don't need to stockpile our rage, our grief, our suffering. We don't need to stockpile all of our judgments about how we might be better or life might be better, including a judgment that if I could stop stockpiling, even that, we don't need to hold on to that. Just seeing is enough. Just seeing this is what the mind does. That's enough. This is a liberated tenderness. The feelings continue to arise and we don't harbor them. We see them. And we let them be and let them go. That's very different from saying, I'm going to stop feeling things. I'm going to stop creating mental formations. I'm going to, you know, create a different mind. We just see the mind that is here. That's the whole deal. So some people might say, well, I don't get how this is of any benefit. Like, why do that? And I think this is where it's a little hard to talk about, but I think there can be a little bit of a shift between, you know, when we buy stuff, the way, you know, Ed Brown uses that word, you know, kind of unconsciously, right? He was unconscious that he was comparing his biscuits to Bisquick. So when we become conscious of it, that's when you can kind of see the humor in it, right? Bisquick? Why was I comparing? I mean, you got to realize this is someone who really cares about baking. Like, this is his job at a Tassajara Zen Center for many years. You know, he wrote books about baking. So his heart's really in this. And isn't it kind of funny that the whole time he'd been comparing what he was doing to Bisquick? So we internalize these notions of what we should be and of who we are, both of which are just notions, but we don't know that we've done that necessarily. We just feel it. We feel the tension. We feel this thing that the Buddha called dukkha, this sense that things aren't quite right. This cart is, the wheel is out of alignment. I am a wobbly cart. That's the feeling. And we just don't know why. So we sit and we notice, okay, what's coming up? What's coming up? When it's unconscious, it's like it kind of controls us, right? We're just always believing it unconsciously and acting on it. So things start to become clear as we meditate. We come to see the way our mind works. I see that I'm creating a compass point outside of myself. And bit by bit, I can let go of them. I can stop harboring them, those compass points. Because I'm aware of them all of a sudden. And the moment we kind of become aware of it, often is the moment that something, it becomes clear that it is merely a mental formation. So again, we don't need to stop it, but it becomes clear what it is. It's not the absolute truth. It's Bisquick. Mind of Bisquick. Now that's funny. We also might notice that these things are actually impermanent. That as we see them, they go their own way. So maybe I'm angry with someone. You know, we have a precept about harboring ill will. It's one thing to just completely be angry and see that we're angry. There's nothing wrong with that. This is human, right? That's Ed Brown. Like, he was trying to live a life without anger. But I don't know how many of you have seen it. I've mentioned this before. He's in the movie How to Cook Your Life. And, you know, he's at one point, he's sitting at a little table, like just raging to himself. You know, he's a Zen teacher. He's like, he's sitting at the table. He says he has an anger problem. Well, he's aware of it. You know, when he gets angry, he just feels angry. You know, what do you think a Zen teacher is supposed to look like? What do you think you're supposed to look like? So just becoming aware of what we think we're supposed to be. The moment we see that, we can see that it's just a thought formation and we aren't in its grip anymore. And we don't need to harbor it. We don't need to keep feeding it with our belief. We just see it. And somehow when we see it, it's like we see it with our whole body. We see it in this moment. We see these mental formations with our entire physical presence. And it's like it's held differently than when we're completely wrapped up in the story. And its impermanence reveals itself. So, you know, we can watch these fires burn and we don't have to put more logs on the fire. We can just let them burn and let them burn down. Now, that doesn't mean there's, you know, ever going to be a time that there's no fire. Fire keeps rising up and passing away, rising up and passing away. This is life. Thank goodness, we're never going to get to a state where nothing's happening. I mean, I guess maybe if we're dead. Maybe. So that's not the goal of our practice. It's to be awake and be with things as they are. That simple. So what if we just let go of all these compass points, let go of all these Bisquick ideas, and just be what we are? Right here, right now, simple, grounded, present. Seeing the mind that's bored, that's angry, that's frustrated, that's happy, that's joyful, whatever it is, that's it. There's the truth manifesting. A yummy, wheaty, flaky, buttery biscuit. Thank you.